Good morning. Yes. Welcome. This is Double Vision on Worldview. My name is Kirk Cooper, and so if you didn't mean to be here, now's the time to kind of exit graciously. This is what we're doing here. So you should know me because I made a couple of the announcements last night. How do we do this? Oh, yeah. All right. I'm supposed to teach or something. All right. Here we go. It's starting 9:15. We're supposed to be done at 10:30. That's right. It's supposed to be 45 minutes long. Isn't that right? I'm going to ask Biggs if, do you have a phone on you or a clock or watch or anything? Will you just let me know if we get close? I don't think that we will, but we'll be fine. Also, Donald, it's not letting me run my, it's not letting me, I can't, the magic doesn't work. Accio remote. It's probably my fault. So, but I have a PowerPoint. We may or may not get to use that. I certainly hope that we do because I don't have notes, as you can see. Here we go. My name is Kirk Cooper, and I'm the youth minister at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And one person clapped for that. Let's go. So you don't have to clap. I mean, Montgomery's just whatever, but it's a town. It is a fine town. But I'm going to try to shut all this down and see if I can run it now. I want to show you a picture of, I have a wife named Marty. I'm not going to show you a picture of her because if I showed you a picture of her, she'd be like, why'd you choose that picture? So I'm just not going to show you a picture. It's never the right picture. The married women and men in here get that. I was going to try to show you a picture of my children. Hey, here they are. So, the one on the left is Campbell. He's 6 years old. We caught a fish that day, like literally like this big. We caught bait. The hook like went through it. Like anyway, it was hilarious. He was like, I caught a fish. And it was like, he caught bait. And then that's Grayson. He's about, 14 months old. So he's just like, he's one, but those are, my boys. And I work, like I said, I get to serve at Trinity in Montgomery. And I grew up in, I was born in South Carolina, and then we moved to Louisiana, and then we moved to Mississippi, and that's where I spent a very long period of time in Mississippi, and then now I live in Alabama. So I've, just in the deep South, I've kind of, you know, I've been in a lot of different places. So, that's why I feel the freedom to make fun of all of your states is because I've lived in most of them. So anyway, what we're gonna do this week is if we go to the next one, it's really disappointing. Is we're gonna talk about what a worldview is. That's what we're gonna do. But before we get into all that, if you want to take notes and all that, you can do that. Before we do that, we should probably pray first. That's probably the best thing to do to start. So let's pray. Lord, I don't have any real wisdom for these students, and some of them are probably more spiritually mature than I am. And Lord, we didn't come here to hear the gospel according to Albert or Kurt or Joey or anyone, really. We came to hear your gospel, and I pray that as we think about your word this morning, as we think about our world and how we view the world, that you would illuminate our minds and that you would speak to our hearts. We pray this in Christ's name and for his sake. Amen. All right. Now, today, let me give you like a little outline of what we're going to do. Today, we're not going to like get into the Bible a whole lot. I know that sounds weird, but we're going to get into the Bible a whole lot in days 2, 3, and 4. But today, I just want to like try to convince you of something, which we'll see at the end. What I'm trying to convince you of. But we're going to talk about what a worldview is. And I don't think a lot of you use that language, you know, frequently. You don't, but you all, all right, well, first of all, what is a worldview? Well, this is a handy little definition that I stole from a guy named Philip Ryken. It says a worldview is a fundamental perspective on the world that shapes the way that we live. And then another kind of an easier way to understand what a worldview is a worldview is the story that we use to make sense of our experiences. So we, as, you know, creating God's image, we're going to get to that. But have you ever noticed that men, women, humans, we're the only ones who we're the only creatures who tell stories. We're the only ones who tell stories. And we tell stories to make sense of what's going on in our world. And I've got two classic stories for us to think about to start out, and how we use these stories are their illustrations on how we have a worldview. So the first one is the tortoise and the hare. And y'all know the story of the tortoise and the hare. They're going to have a race, and it's like a joke because a rabbit is really fast and a turtle is really not fast. And but the turtle is like slow and steady, and the rabbit gets way out ahead, and he takes a nap and he oversleeps, as many of you did for breakfast this morning. He oversleeps and he wakes up and he's like, and he's running and he's sprinting to the finish line, and he is in horror. He realizes that the turtle is just about to cross the finish line. The turtle crosses the finish line just before the rabbit does. Now, that's a fun little story. What is the point of that story? The point of that story is that it's better to be consistent than occasionally great. It's better to be consistently good than occasionally great, right? But instead of me saying, hey, it's better to be consistent than it is to be just sporadically great. Instead, I told you a story, and we all remember that story. It's a powerful story. Well, all I have to do now is say the tortoise and the hare, and you immediately know about the story, and you understand the narrative. Another one is the boy who cried wolf. I told this story to my six-year-old when I was taking him to school in the car. He asked me to tell him stories all the time. It's his favorite thing. And he really likes it when I read to him, but he really likes it when I just make up stories, just make up a story. And then he likes to, like, try to edit it. Like, he'll be like, I'm like, once there were three bears. And he's like, no, it should be five bears, Daddy. And I was like, okay, there were five bears. And if he does it too much, I'm like, fine, you tell the story. I think he knows that I love him. No, he does. We're driving to school, and he's like, tell me a story. And I'm like, you know what? It's time for me to, like, lay a life lesson on this child real quick. So I was like, all right, one time there was a little shepherd boy, Campbell, like a little boy like you, and he was a shepherd boy. And he thought it would be so funny to cry out wolf. And so he was like, wolves, wolves. And all the people from the town came to help him, you know, but there were no wolves. And the boy laughed and laughed, and Campbell thought that was so funny. He's kind of a jokester. And he thought that was so funny. And I said, and then, like, a couple days later, he was like, let's try it again. And he was like, wolves, wolves. And everybody came out, and there were no wolves. And he laughed and laughed and thought it was so funny. And then a couple days after that, a wolf really came, and a wolf started to attack the sheep. And he cried out, wolf, wolf. But everyone was like, that kid, he got us twice. He's not going to get us again. And they waited. And so the wolf killed the sheep, and then he ate the little boy. And which I added at the end to try to extra scare him. And I was like, "What? what is the moral of that story?" And my son, to his credit, goes, "Don't say wolf." What is the moral to that story? The moral to that story is, if you're constantly joking around, no one will take you seriously, right? But I don't just say to you, if you're constantly joking around, no one will take you seriously. I can say that to you. It doesn't have the same kind of effect than when I say, well, you know the story about the boy who cried wolf. Don't be the boy who cried wolf. It's a story, and it not only does it, like, kind of seep into our brain, and it won't get out of our brain, like, and we can remember it, and it just, but more than that, it helps us explain something that we know is true. It's true that you should, if you tell lies all the time, no one's going to believe you. That's true. It's true that you will be more successful if you're consistently good than if you're just sporadically great. That's true. It's a true thing. And so it's a story that we use to explain reality, and that's what a worldview is. My voice is going to crack a lot, by the way, so we just get over that right now. I thought I would lose it by Wednesday, and we're way ahead of schedule. So a worldview is a story that we tell to make sense of what's going on around us, all right? Another way to think about this is, like, today's the volleyball tournament, and, like, within the first 20 to 30 minutes of volleyball tournament, a bunch of people are just going to get totally housed out of the volleyball tournament, and they're going to have a story to tell about how that happened. The teams that are doing the housing are going to be like, yeah, those guys were trash. This is so easy. We're great. The great set, bro, and or whatever. And I don't do sports a lot. I tried to play Gotcha or Knockout last night, and I jammed my finger really bad. And now that's how it works for me. But the teams who lose, they will have a completely different story about the same game. They'll be like, well, those guys were doing lifts, and they were in the net a lot. And it's funny how this is what we do. We tell stories to explain the way that we perceive the world. All right. And sometimes those stories are true, and sometimes they're not true, and that's what's very interesting. The other thing about stories that's really important is that God reveals himself through a story. That's what Scripture is. Scripture is a story, and God is revealing himself. So God uses stories. Have you ever noticed this about Jesus? Someone would be like, Jesus, tell me about this or tell me about that. And it might be a really complicated theological concept. Like, what does it mean to love my neighbor? And Jesus would not be like, well, you know, he didn't talk about some abstract idea of what the neighbor is. No, he said, one time there was a man, and he was going down to Jericho, and he was waylaid, and these people came by, and they didn't help him, and then a Samaritan came by. He told a story. This is what he does all the time. He's like, the kingdom of heaven is like, you know, this, or the kingdom of heaven is like that, or the kingdom is, and he would tell a story every time. Jesus tell stories. So there's something about us that we love stories. And our worldview is our story. And I don't mean like they're making a movie about you and you're the, you know, like the, like no one's ever going to make a movie about you. Can we just be honest? Like no one is. All right. Like I'm very confident about that. I'm very confident that no one that hears his voice is going to have a movie made about him. I feel like it's pretty good chances. But that's not what I mean when I say your story. That's sometimes when I say your story, you think of like there's, you know, the crew behind you, and it's like, you know, it's Keeping Up with, instead of the Kardashians, it's you, you know, like, or whoever. And although, well, I'm not going to try to get too much into that, but your life I think would be better to watch than theirs. But moving on, that's not what I mean. What I mean is the story that you tell to explain what's happening. That's, you have a story. Okay, so let's go to the next slide, if you don't mind. This is a great quote. It says, whether he wishes it or not, man as a free creature must pattern his life according to some chosen ultimate end, must center his life on some chosen ultimate loyalty, and must commit his security to some trusted power. Man inevitably roots his life in something ultimate. So who has a worldview? Everyone has a worldview. Everyone has one. No one is without a worldview. No one isn't trying to make sense of their reality by telling stories. And I can prove this to you in so many ways. I can just go to social media. I can go to yours. I could grab one of your phones, and I could look at your Instagram, like the things that you posted, and like I will be able to tell a lot. You can, about your worldview and about what you believe. I could go to your Twitter account, or I could go to your Snapchat, or I don't know, whatever. I don't understand Snapchat. I'm just going to be honest. I've never been on it, so forget I said that. But I could, like, you can go to the comment section of any place on the internet, and you will find people telling their story about whatever happened. You know, there's evidence all around us that everyone has a worldview, that everyone has a worldview, that everyone believes something about reality. There's no one who is, one of the things that's really cool to be is to be like kind of above and beyond, like I don't really get into politics a lot. Like people get so triggered about politics. And as a defense mechanism, what I do is I just kind of stay out of it. Like I just make fun of both of them. I'm like, you know, I laugh at the people who cried when Donald Trump was elected, and I laugh at the people who think that he's a good president. I laugh at both of them. But what I'm doing is oftentimes what I'm doing is that's kind of a defense mechanism, because I don't want to wade into that where I'm like, I'm better than these people, right? That's what I'm letting you in inside me right now. Like and sometimes we can do that. We can be like, oh, well, this person, we label people. We're like, this person thinks this way or this person thinks that way. And oftentimes this is really what's the problem with political discourse and with everything in the country and in the world, is that oftentimes what we do is we do not engage people's worldview. We engage them personally. We don't. So like, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Let me take something that I think a lot of people in here would probably feel the same way about. All right. So like something like abortion, whether abortion should be a thing, okay? Now, some people say abortion should be legal, safe, and seldom, or something like that. That's their argument. And other people will be like, abortion should never, ever happen, or whatever. One way in which you could respond to someone who thinks that abortion should be legal, safe, and, you know, this, they would be on one side of the camp. One way you could respond to them is be like, well, you're a baby killer. Okay, now, you've just ended all discourse, all right? Also, what have you done? You haven't engaged, like, their ideas or their worldview or why they think that way. What you've done is you've just made it personal, and you've gone into what's called an ad hominem attack. You're pretty much useless in the fight at this point because you have not engaged their worldview. You've engaged them. You've engaged them. You haven't engaged their worldview. Everyone has a worldview, and oftentimes a lot of the problems is we just stick labels on people, and we're like, well, you're just this or you're just that, and we're not really engaging why they think the way they think. Because worldviews can change. We're going to come to that later on this week. But worldviews can change, but they don't change by just slapping someone in the face and being like, you're dumb, idiot. That doesn't work. Typically, I haven't seen it work yet. Maybe it does. Maybe there's someone around here who's backhanding people into, you know, different worldviews, but I haven't seen it. Everyone has a worldview, and what we want to do is we want to engage someone's worldview, all right, why they think the way that they think. What, you know, I asked you a question. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself. All right, let's go to the next slide. All right, what is a worldview? Who has a worldview? Okay, before we play this video, I'm going to play you a couple clips today, okay? And what I want to say to you is this, is that I want to ask the question, where do you get your worldview? Like, the way that you see the world, where does it come from? Did you come up with it on your own? Or what? I want to suggest to you that there are at least three places, there are many more, but three places where you get your worldview. The first one is, you get your worldview based off what you love, okay? The second thing is that you get your worldview based off what you inherit. And the third thing is that you get your worldview based off what you fear, okay? So where do you get your worldview? It's based on what you love. At least these three things. There's more, but at least these three. Love, what you love, what you inherit, and what you fear. Now, if we have we're going to need the sound turned up. So I'm sure Donald is. Yesterday was Donald's birthday. Can y'all give it up for Donald back there? Yeah, he's awesome. So Donald Krishan on the ones and twos. So we're going to play this clip. I'm going to play you a couple clips, but I'm going to play you this clip, and then we're going to talk about how you get your worldview by what you love. Will you hit play?
Forgive me. I feel it again. The pull to the light. Supreme Leader senses it. Show me again the power of the darkness. And I will let nothing stand in our way. Show me. Grandfather, and I will finish what you started.
Okay, so if you haven't seen any of the new Star Wars movies, that is a guy named Kylo Ren. I realize that's dark, but both in content and the actual like lighting of the movie, but that's Kylo Ren, and Kylo Ren is Darth Vader's grandson. Kylo Ren is the lamest enemy in Star Wars that we've seen so far. He's like the emo Jedi. He's like, oh, my feelings are hurt. Choke you. You know, like, he's, I have no respect for him. So I said that at middle school, and some kid was like, he's actually the most powerful. And I was like, you're the problem with the world today. See, I didn't engage his worldview. I just, like, he just looks like I could beat him up. I don't respect any villain who looks like, oh, I could take that guy. No, I just don't respect you. You need to, I mean, anyway. So, but Kylo Ren, he's easy to make fun of. But what does Kylo Ren do? And you can go to the next slide. But what does he do? He patterns his life after what he loves. He resembles what he loves. He is obsessed with his granddad, Darth Vader. So obsessed with Darth Vader that he speaks to the burned out husk of a mask that is left from when Luke Skywalker cremated or burned Darth Vader. He's obsessed, and he resembles what he loves. It has shaped his worldview and the way he sees the world based upon this fact. He doesn't have to wear that mask. In fact, if you've seen the Star Wars movies, a lot of people make fun of him because he wears the mask. They're like, take that stupid mask off. Like, you're not Darth Vader. Like, it's easy for us to make fun of him, but how often do we do the same exact thing? We resemble what we love. We start to look like the things that we love. You go to a game, and you go to a soccer game, and there are more than 22 jerseys out there. There are all these jerseys in the stands. All these people are wearing, all these people, why do people wear jerseys? You know, why do we? What are we doing? We're resembling. When I was in high school, there was a show that was really popular called Friends, and it came back. It's on Netflix now, so it's kind of come back. And the first couple seasons are pretty good, and after that, it's kind of trash. But when Friends was really popular, one of the actresses, Jennifer Aniston, the show was so popular that, like, all across the nation, hairdressers were constantly being asked for women were coming in saying, please give me the Aniston. Like, give me Jennifer Aniston's hair. They were so obsessed with her hair and the exact length and the style that she had. And why is that? It's because whatever we love, we start to resemble. It's not so much what we love. It's often what we worship, all right? What we think. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Because here's the other thing about what we love is that often what we love, the created things, they're not strong enough to hold our love or to be like the foundational pillar of our worldview. And so when they get attacked, we get really defensive. Like, I'm trying to decide who to make fun of right now. That's going through my mind right now. But, I'll just pick on Ole Miss for a second. Are there Mississippi people in here? Yeah, okay. So I'll pick on Ole Miss for a second because, well, quite frankly, they're easy to pick on. But, oh, I know, shots fired. Hey, remember when Ole Miss's baseball team was ranked in, like, the top five? That was cute. The good season y'all had. We didn't catch y'all in Omaha. Where were y'all? No, like, or how about this? I'll go the other way. Hey, isn't it cool how State keeps playing for national championships and losing? Like, you know, when you make fun of someone's favorite sports team, or if I were to say this, hey, do you like 5 Seconds of Summer? Oh, you verified for me that you're not very smart. Like, if I say that, like, if I say that, watch how quickly you're ready to be like, but, no. You want to defend whatever it is. I mean, all those things are fine. You love Ole Miss, love State, love 5 Seconds of Summer, love who, I don't care. But we want to defend what we love, okay? Because it's weak and it needs defending. And so we're very defensive about, and this is where you get into, the fact is that we want to prove that what we believe about the world is true and right and good, okay? And what we love matters. And this is why you do, like, celebrity endorsements. Do you think that Tiger Woods ever really drove a Buick? Come on. Come on. Tiger Woods, like, wrote his ex-wife, like, a several $100 million check and was like, all right. Like, he was fine financially. Obviously, spiritually, he's got a long way to go. But But do you really think that a guy who rolls that deep is rolling in a Buick? A Buick. A Buick SUV. Okay. But why? Why does Tiger Woods, you know why? It's because people love golf, and they love the people who are best at golf. And so Buick was like, you know who likes golf? Rich old white guys. And you know who rich old white guys also like? Buicks. Let's get Tiger Woods to act like he drives a Buick, and we'll sell more Buicks. Money made. You know, vacation paid for. Let's head to wherever, you know, Branson, Missouri, or wherever the old people head for their vacation. You know, so a lot of old people vacation in Branson, Missouri. It's a beautiful place, but come on. All right, so that's why they do that. They do that because we want to be like the things that we love. And so if someone that you love or worship or admire, if they say, this is a good product, then you'll be like, that's a good product. That's how it works. That's how it works, guys. That's how our worldview, what we love affects our worldview, all right? What we love affects our worldview. Well, not only does what we love affect our worldview, or it's where we from where we derive our worldview, but also what we inherit. Can I play the next clip?
Abuelita runs our house just like Mama Imelda did.
No music. No music!
No music!
I think we're the only family in Mexico who hates music. And my family's fine with that. But me?
Be back by lunch, mijo.
Love you, mama. I am not like the rest of my family.
Okay. I don't know if y'all seen Coco, but first of all, you're not going to believe this, but Pixar made a movie about a child, and the child isn't understood by his family. I know. Shocking. Seriously, Pixar. Like, there's people who have, like, good parents. I don't know. Is there a movie for them? I guess there's not. But so what is the story of Coco? The story of Coco is that in Coco's family, they've inherited a worldview. So not only do you get your worldview from what you love, but you also get it from what you inherit, because there is this tragedy that happened, earlier. And because of that, there's a woman who doesn't like music, and her daughter doesn't like music, and her daughter doesn't like music, and her daughter is Coco's grandmother. And they all, you see what she said? She goes, Miguel, he said, we're the only family in Mexico who doesn't like music, and my family is fine with that. My family is fine with that. That they've inherited a worldview. Like, the thing that happened that caused pain didn't really directly affect, you know, the grandmother, or certainly not Miguel's parents or whatever, but they've inherited a worldview. Our cultural inertia is very difficult to break. This is why I never respect my students when they talk about politics. This is why I don't respect what they say. It's because mostly what they do is they just parrot what they hear their parents say. Like, I love it when, like, some 10th grade boy is like, well, here's what they ought to do about immigration. And I'm like, okay, you're 16, maybe. You might still be 15. And you've got this really complicated situation figured out. I don't know why didn't we ask the sophomore boy? I don't know why we didn't just, we're trying to figure out this thing. We should have, it was right there in front of us the whole time. The sophomore boy has the key. You know, it's because we oftentimes the things that we love, the things that we hate, the things that we like, are the way that we view the world, we just inherit it. We inherit it from our culture, and we also inherit it from our families, all right? That's where you get the idea of, like, the way that we've always done it. We've just always done it that way. And that's very, lots of people do things, and if you ask them why, they'll be like, well, we just always did it that way. And that's the only reason they need. It's just very hard to break that. I'll give you two examples of how this works. The first one is Christmas traditions, okay? When I got married, You know, we started doing this thing before we had children. We started doing this thing where we would spend one Christmas day with my wife's parents, grandparents, actually, because that's who raised her, and then the other Christmas day with my parents. And so we would, her house 1 year, my house next year. And here is how Christmas Day unfolds at her house, okay? At her house, like, someone plays Santa. I hate when someone says that, by the way. Like, I'm like, you're just moving the gifts, like, 4 feet. Let's Santa goes around the world. That's not really a real comparison. But, wait, Santa's not real? No. They give the gifts, like, the gifts that everybody has got. They give them to everybody. And then they say, 1, 2, 3, go, and everyone just opens their gifts all at once. And at my house, the way that we do it, some of you are about to get so triggered, is the way we grew up is we would give the gifts out, but then, like, we would all just take turns opening our gifts one at a time. Like, we'd go in a circle. Some of you are nodding yes. And, like, I just remember, like, when I was at my wife's house and they were opening the gifts like this, I was like, we're just all going to open them all at once like some kind of barbarians? Like, Jesus is crying right now. You've ruined his birthday. Why in the world? You know, and then when my wife came to my house, she was like, it's too much pressure. Let's just open them. I don't want to sit around and wait. What do I get? Like, and some of you, maybe you're on my side. Some of you, you're on her side. But that's something, it's not right or wrong, right? That, like, it's not. Neither one of us are right. It's just what we inherit. It's what we've always done. It's what we're used to. But I want you to see how quickly we can take what we're used to and turn it into what's right and wrong. How quickly we can take what we've always done and say, well, this is the way it has to be. The way we take something that is really just kind of a preference and turn it into like a morality thing. And we don't necessarily do it at Christmas, but we do it in other places. I want to give you a cultural example, okay? Which is worse? We'll do this by a show of hands, okay? If there's an elected official, okay, let's say like a governor of some state, and let's say it's a guy, in your mind, is it worse if he has an extramarital affair or if he puts his mom in a nursing home? All right, who thinks the affair is worse? All right, put your hands down. Who thinks the nursing home is worse? Like, this guy's trying to be funny and just raise one hand. Or do you really believe that? You really? Okay. Now, almost everyone put the extramarital affair, okay? Now, here's why you did that. Not because of any moral issue. It's only because you're Americans. Only because you're white Americans did you do that, okay? Because you can go to a lot of places in the world, a lot of places, and there are elected officials that just keep getting elected, and they have mistresses all over the place, and they'll just be like, well, he's a passionate man. But if that elected official even mentioned the idea that he would put his grandmother or his mother in a nursing home, he would be worse than a thief. They would just consider him to be human refuse to do that. And in our culture, it's the exact opposite. We just, and look, I'm not here to comment about what people do with their, with their elderly, but, like, we just think that's not a big deal at all. But if someone, look, that's a cultural thing, okay? That's a cultural thing. That's something that you have inherited, okay? And you think one way, if we did RYM Brazil and I offered that same thing, the hands would be exact opposites. The hands would be exact opposites. Everyone would be like, put your mother in a nursing home. What are you? You're like, that sends you straight to hell. You're laughing. I'm not even joking. Like, for real. Go look at South American politics. Go look at them and just see. It's a cultural thing, okay? It's a cultural thing. And all I'm trying to say is, I'm not trying to comment on nursing homes or affairs. I don't think, I don't want to get into that. What I'm trying to say is that the way that you think right there, just proven, you did not just come up with that on your own. That's been, you inherited it. You inherited it. Just like, Mama Coco's daughter hates music. You, the way that you think about the world, you've inherited. Now, I got one more clip to show you. Before we move to that next clip, let me say one other thing. Let me tell one other example of how I think sometimes I don't think we realize how we inherit or just how we can damage the kind of damage that we can do by just going with the flow. So let me just share one more thing really quick. I think how we doing on time? We have 8 minutes. You know what? I'm gonna save that. We'll do it tomorrow. All right, we gotta keep going because we have to play this clip. All right. Actually, you know what? I'm just all over the place. If we have to just stop, that's fine. I'm going to tell this story because I think it's important. Okay, when I was in college, I took some friends back to that were not from my hometown. I took them to the homecoming game at my hometown high school, my alma mater, and the Tupelo Golden Wave, by the way. That's where I'm from. So, and I don't know what it's like now, but it was definitely this way when I was in high school and when I was in college too. So we go to the game, and Tupelo's team is kind of trash, so we're kind of getting worked a little bit. But we stay. You really don't go to watch the game. You're going to see and be seen. So, you know, we're hanging out and we're talking. And we get to the halftime, you know, homecoming. I don't know what you guys do, but there's typically like the queen. You have the homecoming queen. It's such a big deal. It's not. Someone I work with was homecoming queen, and I give her so much flack about it. She's like, I think at this point she kind of wishes she wasn't. So I would not quit talking about it. I'd say, like, oh, do you wear your tiara around? Like, everything you do in high school seems like such a big deal, and then all of a sudden no one will care about it at all. Like, and if you were to brag about it, people would be like, look at this Uncle Rico. So, at my high school, my friends were like, y'all have two homecoming queens? And I was like, yeah, we always have two homecoming queens, one white girl and one black girl every year. Y'all, look how shocked y'all are right now. I was not shocked at all. I was like, we do it every year. I was like, our school. They were like, what? I was like, well, here's what happened. I said, I think, you know, a long time ago when our school was about 50-50 white and black and with a smattering of other ethnicities. But for the most part, you know, it was that. I was like, I think at some point, like they would, when they only had one homecoming queen, like, the white people would only put up one girl and not let anyone else run, and the black people would put up only one girl and not let anyone else run, and, you know, so that we could have. And they were just, like, tired of that, so they were like, you know what, we're going to have a white girl and a black girl every year, so y'all can, and anyone that wants to can run. And, I was like, that just made sense to me. Now, it made sense to me because I grew up in it. They were like, that is insane. They were like, that is the dumbest thing that I've ever heard. Like, you just, like, let people run and do what they want. And I was like, no, it is insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, just let someone be homecoming queen. First of all, it doesn't matter at all. And secondly, like, but just, I'm sharing that example to show you that, like, and the South has plenty of race problems, obviously. So, although I think that it's getting better, but. At least I have hope that it's getting better. But I just didn't know. I was like, oh, y'all don't do that? And everyone looked at me and was like, no, we don't do that because we're not psychotic. And I was like, "And let me just ask you this. What if there's something that you believe that's just like that? What if there's something that you're just, maybe that's what this week is for you, is maybe someone comes in to your life this week and it's like, hey, this is what you think about the world? Dude, you're crazy. And for the first time, like me at that homecoming game, you kind of take a step back and be like, dude, this is kind of crazy. Why do we do this? And maybe it's not about racism. Maybe it's about the way that you treat your friends, the way that you gossip, or the way that you look at the opposite sex, or the way, you know, and someone is able to, you know, my friends, I didn't feel judged at that point. My friends looked at me and were like, dude, that's just messed up. And at first I felt like I had to defend it, and then I was like, no, it is messed up. What is that for you? be sensitive. I just say this. Be sensitive to the fact that your worldview needs to change, that your worldview, the way that you think the world runs and the way that God thinks the world runs are not the same thing. How are we doing on time? 3 minutes? 4 minutes. Okay. We're getting to, all right. We're going to try to show this. We're going to try to show this clip. I'm going to try to run through this last clip. I don't think I have time. You know what? I'm all over the place. I'm sorry. I'm just going to cut it off right there. And tomorrow we'll start back and we'll talk about how you get your worldview from what you fear.